On Wells Tech This Week, it's all about data. Sally and I put together a list of the 7 best data management tools, whether that be for church, school, preschool, prospects. You won't want to miss that. Also, we talk about some exciting news coming out of Facebook as they partner with Dropbox so that you can put files into Facebook. Great for all those congregations thinking about Facebook as an intranet. All that and more coming up. Stay tuned. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello again, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs with the Wells Tech Podcast, recording for October 2nd, episode 256. Thank you for letting us come into your lives for about an hour today. And alongside me doing that is Sally Draper. Good morning, or actually afternoon, Sally.
Good afternoon, Martin. We're recording for October, but we're still living in September.
Yes.
A little back bit of pre-recording this week because you aren't going to be available next week. You've got plans.
Yeah, I'm taking a little bit of a vacation, a personal vacation. I normally don't do that, but just myself is going up to Door County, Wisconsin, which is that little finger that sits on the top of Wisconsin. Kind of a beautiful place. Mm-hmm. And the leaves, I'm sure, are turning up there. And I'm going up for a photography workshop. 3 days with an expert couple, a husband and wife who lead a class for the Peninsula School of Art. And they're going to show me how to work this camera that I've got that I putter around with. So hopefully I'll come back with some great fall pictures, and I'm looking forward to it.
It's really very good.
Really something I've been looking forward to for a long time. So we'll see how it goes. The weather's supposed to be great, but as a result, I won't be there. If anybody's ever been to Door County, they know that internet coverage is not so hot up there. So rather than risk not having a show, we decided, well, let's just do it a little bit early. So full disclosure, it's Thursday, September 27th, the afternoon. Thursday is the day that we could do it. And so here we are. So
but
if you're watching
live,
that's some act of, that's a miracle if you
want. <Yeah.
watch.
laughs> We're not short on content, though, even though we just recorded a podcast just 2 days ago. We've got some great stuff to share in this show. I'm looking forward to it. It's the first of the month, and all throughout 2012, our first of the month shows have been 7 best countdown list. And this month, we're going to be counting down the 7 best member prospect and student management tools. You guys all have data.
Catchy title, yes.
Yeah, dealing with data can get kind of hairy at times.
And all about data.
Mm-hmm. We thought we would count down some tools that may make your life a little bit easier in that regard.
We hope so. And this is something that anybody who works in the church office or around the church office can appreciate, because it is difficult to stay on top of the data about your members, about your prospects, about your students. Any kind of list management that you need to do can be a challenging thing. And what makes it even more challenging is you have 101 options of how to do it. And this is not a list of 101. We've tried to distill that down to 7, but we've kind of cheated a little bit because we've got some categories in which you can pick and choose from. And Sally, I don't know about you. This is one of the toughest lists I think we've put together, because there were so many options and there's some things on the list that we just don't have experience with. And we wanted to provide as much depth and breadth as possible, but it's really not possible in a list like this because every situation maybe demands a little bit different tool. So we didn't get a lot of feedback for this list. So there's still, I would still welcome our listeners' feedback to this if they are watching or listening and they say, well, why didn't they talk about this? Please share that with us, and then we'll reshare the list and make sure that everybody has an opportunity to learn from your knowledge.
Absolutely. And, you know, it is a long title, members, prospects, and students. But there's data in all those different areas. So that makes it even more challenging. And our number 7 on the list, Martin, to get things started is actually even a subset of one of those. It's a software specifically dedicated to daycare or after school care kind of situations. Mm-hmm. And I know over the last couple of years, we've gotten these questions periodically because a lot of school settings are offering daycare or after school care programs. And with that comes checking in and out of the students, keeping up with the exact amount of time that they're there, because many of them are billed on an hourly or half hourly basis and that kind of thing. And just the billing and managing the billing and things. So we do have an old podcast. It's about 3 years old. And when we interviewed someone from ProCare Software, which is a daycare software solution that's being used at Christ in Zumbrota, Minnesota. And we'll make sure and include a link to that so you can listen to the expert from ProCare. And like you said, I'm guessing there's other solutions like these out there. So let us hear from you, listeners, if you have a great solution for after-school care management.
And that is something, at the time, as I recall, we had a lot of requests for. We had, and I get that still pretty regularly, what do you use for that kind of thing? And it's not any surprise that one of the reasons that that demand is pretty high is we're starting a lot of daycares and preschools. Mm-hmm. And the software that's out there for managing elementary schools, high schools, churches is not suitable for that purpose. There's a lot of nuances to keeping track of small kids, and parents really need maybe a higher level of control and comfort when it comes to their, their preschooler or younger.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right, time to move on to number 6 on the list. And it's kind of one of those all-encompassing categories as well, which we called contact management. So as we drill down further in the list, we'll talk about specific tools for holding all your data. But with that data, you want to be able to make use of it on a mobile basis or in your email, mm-hmm. or however. You need to have some kind of way of managing all that data. And, you know, you could just use something like Outlook or Gmail. And I even found an article about adding fields to your Gmail contact list to make it more robust, whatever those fields might be for managing prospects or members or whatever. But there are other categories of contact management software, Martin, that you're more familiar with, right, that we want to provide links to as well.
Right. There are anybody that's worked any kind of sales position, inside sales especially, but anybody who manages, I know some of our listeners are in charge of advancement offices for high schools or whatever. So they need to maintain some kind of potential donor list or prospect list. And there's a whole category called CRM, constituent relationship management, or customer relationship management. And there's some kind of consumer or prosumer type tools like Goldmine or ACT. Those have been around forever. And those are just basically databases that have been crafted to meet those needs. And then in some research for the show, I said, well, there's got to be some open source stuff there. And there absolutely is. One that seems to be the most popular and maybe the most robust is Civi CRM, C-I-V-I CRM. It's at civicrm.org. And this is a plugin that actually works with content management systems like Drupal, Joomla, and WordPress. So if you have one of those kinds of installations, you can plug this in, and it provides all kinds of functionality as far as managing data, managing relationships, managing contacts with those relationships, and a whole bunch of other stuff like donations. You can receive donations. You can track events or manage events, take signups, those kinds of things. So it's really a community environment that you can build that maybe meets the needs of your potential prospects or whatever. So maybe worth a look at.
Yeah, if anyone's using a solution like that, we'd love to hear from you and hear how it's working. And I know there's some diehard open source fans in our listening audience, so yeah, maybe they'll want to check it out.
Number 5 is kind of similar, but we'll call it our DIY category, do-it-yourself or roll-your-own in technology terms. And there are a lot of these kinds of databases that you're basically starting out with a clean slate and you build it the way you want to. So a couple that we've talked about in the past, Salesforce.com was a recommendation from one of our listeners a while back. Everybody knows Access. That's something you get with the Microsoft Office suite. And so that's kind of a table-driven relationship tool that you can build and build reports and forms and those kinds of things. And there are other online tools like Zoho. Some of those are paid for. Some of those are free. But there's lots of different options there. So if you're technically inclined and you understand databases, and I guess that would be the encouragement, Sally, that you really shouldn't just dive in and start doing this without some knowledge about how databases work and how data should relate to one another, because you can get into a maintenance nightmare if you just kind of build this the way maybe you're maybe you'd like to see it on a screen without thinking about how records relate to each other. And especially with like a church or school database, you have all kinds of relationships and different kinds of relationships. So you have a father-son relationship and sister-brother relationship and grandparents and step-parents and all those kinds of things that you really need to keep track of. And that's not easy to build. That's why some of these out-of-the-box products exist. So think carefully before you do it yourself, but that is a possibility.
Absolutely. Another do-it-yourself possibility made the list all by itself at place number four, and that's just your trusty, dusty old spreadsheet program, maybe Microsoft Excel or Google Calc or whatever it's called, the Google Docs spreadsheet. And, you know, for simple data manipulation, that might be the way to go. Maybe you do go ahead and put it in the cloud and use the Google version so you can access it from remote locations. But oftentimes, especially in a smaller congregation or school setting, a spreadsheet may be the best way to just maintain a little bit of data. And certainly, spreadsheets can do some pretty robust things. What they can't do is those relationship kind of things that you were talking about in regard to a full-fledged database solution. So
yeah, not easily.
Just be a basic list that you might maintain or even export from some other database solution and work with individually for some reason.
Yeah.
But certainly a spreadsheet can fill the gap for you if you're just looking at a small set of data.
Yeah, for sure. And they're good at mail merge type applications. Mm-hmm. So if you're trying to put together labels or personalized email or whatever, the Microsoft products especially work real nicely together. So you can easily do that, address an envelope, et cetera. So put together a church directory, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. What's number three, Sally?
Number three goes well with spreadsheets, actually, and it's using online forms for data submission. So with whatever back-end solution you have for maintaining your data, it's nice to have forms where people can give you data. And you can do that a lot of different ways. One of the free solutions we've recommended quite a bit lately is called jotform.com. And it has a really robust builder for online forms, and you can use it on their website or you can take it and embed it on your own website. And then you have a lot of access to the data and can sort and download to spreadsheets and things like that. We use forms on our website for gathering information about flowers, who wants to put flowers on the altar. Just one example. I know others use it for VBS registrations or whatever may be the case. Another form solution would be Google Forms, which ties to the Google spreadsheet program. And then Final Web, our web hosting partner, has a form solution as well. Martin, you have a Final Web form up on the screen.
Yeah, our website makes extensive use of the Final Web forms. They're not overly robust, but for very specific purposes, they do the trick if you're just registering VBS students or Sunday school students or trying to capture the latest information from your membership. That's a form that I'm showing here where we just encourage our members to come here if they've got address changes or phone number or email changes. They can go on this form and submit it, and it gets sent, stored in a database or table, basically on Final Web Server, which the administrator can get to, or emails whoever you want to directly. So it's robust in that fashion, very simple to put together. And what we did at Peace was not only just ask for membership information, but also time and talent information. So we've got a little drop down where they can select their time and talent info and then leave us notes as well. So that's just an easy way. It probably took, you know, half hour to build the form, and you just publish it and it's ready to go. So I think for many purposes, it works just fine.
Yep. Number two on our list shifts gears back to the actual software. And this is a particular class of software that we're highlighting here, student information systems. So there are many, many vendors out there that are eager to sell schools software to manage their student population. And the software can do everything from keeping up with the grades, keeping up with the lunch program, tracking immunizations, producing transcripts and things, as well as keeping up with just basic attendance information and contact information. The Wells Lutheran Schools Office has partnered with PowerSchool, and many Wells schools are using PowerSchool for this particular need. I know here in New Ulm, Minnesota Valley Lutheran High School uses Infinite Campus, and at our school, we use Jupyter Grades. So those are just a couple of solutions that fit in this category.
There are, you know, these are cropping up all over the place, and none of these are free that I'm aware of. So there is some cost, you know, to any online service. But sometimes you also get what you pay for, and you have the ability to have that backed up. You have kind of that peace of mind, and then also the support that goes along with it. So one encouragement here as you're thinking about student information systems is, first of all, don't always go with the cheapest solution. Second, think about long term. Are you going to be able to live with this? Is this a company that's going to be around for a while? Some of these do change hands quite a bit. And if you're struggling with it at the beginning or just trying to understand the concept, it's likely going to be a struggle all the way through. Because remember, you got to teach new people to do this all the time, especially if you have volunteers working in the school office, or management of it changes hands, or you have new staff. So it's really got to be easy to use, or it'll just become a frustration.
Sally? That's just kind of a depressing thought. But yeah, you're right. We do always have new people. I'm laughing because I'm on the support end of our actual content management system that we use for our congregation. And that's actually number one on
number
our list.
Number one.
Yeah,
yes.
That category of, and it says CMS, Martin. I don't know if I said the acronym.
Church Management System.
Okay. Our church management system that we use here in Sleepy Eye is Shepherd Staff. And I do have to train people on how to use Shepherd Staff. So you hit the nail on the head with that whole training aspect of it as well. So, but there are many church management systems out there. As a matter of fact, Christian Computing Magazine shared an awesome chart comparing the features of a 20 or 25 different church management systems on the chart. Yep. And this is pretty thorough. So
I guess
if you're looking for a comparison, you might want to check out this chart. We'll make sure and have a link in the show notes.
That tool is really cool too, because you can check and uncheck the features that you care about. Mm-hmm. And then filter it down to the best selection, even by price, by feature, by whether it's hosted online or offsite or it's on site, those kinds of things, really is nice.
Yeah, so definitely check that out. I mentioned Shepherd Staff falls in this category, and we do have a relationship with Concordia Publishing. It's a discount for Wells Congregations.
10% discount for any Wells congregation. So make sure you take advantage of that if that's the direction you go.
And they are also developing an online version called Church 360. And I think that's still in beta, but they are still developing so that you can do this kind of thing online as well. Other popular ones, Icon CMO, Logos, and Astor Technology. ACS.com or Acer Technology?
ACS Technology, I think, right?
Okay, very good. Mm-hmm. So, check out the chart. Let us know what you're using and if it's working well in your congregation or school, and we'd be happy to share additional links to other software.
Yep. All right. Well, that was a quick 1 through 7 countdown of the best member, prospect, and student management tools, and by no means all inclusive or exhaustive. And I'm sure there are other methods, and it can be not just software products, but approaches. You know, what tips and tricks do you have as far as maybe gathering that information? You know, how do you keep your member database up to date? Because that is sometimes a challenge, is just getting, even though you have a good system, the data in it isn't so good because members don't tell you that they've moved or whatever. And then you go to visit them on every member visit or whatever, maybe an elder call, and you waste your time. So it is good stewardship of time to make sure your data stays clean. And that's not an easy thing to do, but worthwhile.
Most definitely. All right. We are going to do a 7 best list again next month, and we'd love for our listeners to contribute to that. And what is our November 7 best countdown, Martin?
That would mean I'd have to be able to open up this little mind map. Your scheduled video and web conferencing.
Awesome.
That. So that's a question I'm getting a lot lately too, is, well, I'd like to do some remote Bible studies. I'd like to, bring my far-flung congregation a little bit closer together and do a little video or web conferencing, and lots of choices there. So maybe we can even demo a few for them. So looking forward to November. So if you've got any thoughts on what maybe works for you, video or web conferencing wise, let us know. And Sally, how would they let us know?
Oh, there's lots of ways to contribute to Wells Tech. Probably the best is to go to our show notes website at wellstech.wells.net. You can leave a comment right there on the website, or you can email us, contact us by voicemail at 405-4-WELLS, or use any of our social links. Let's see if I can bring up the website here on my screen. We have a variety of social contact ways featured in the upper right area of the Wells Tech website. So we're on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, Digo, and of course Pinterest. And there's also the ever popular Wells Tech listserv where you can get questions answered and the like. So get
in touch.
We're
going to need a wider web page for if we add any more of those icons up there.
Okay, so let the powers that be know that's enough social networks where they can stop developing those now.
Yeah, that Pinterest one took us over the edge a little bit there, I'm thinking. So.
Well, we can get rid of something else, but we're keeping Pinterest. Sorry.
Okay. All right, should we move on to ministry resources?
Yes, sir. And I should share my screen again because I came across an article about an interesting app. This is iOS only, so you can get this for your iPhone, iPod Touch, or iPad. And it's called the Prayer Notebook, a Christian Prayer Journal. And this app has a light version, which is free, or the pay-for version is $2. And for that, you are able to input different prayers and set up reminders so that the app will nudge you, give you a little reminder.
Cool. I like it.
You know, when you want to pray for them, and you can decide if you want it to be on an everyday basis or on a certain day, and you can even make it time specific.
That is awesome.
It's interesting. I haven't really encountered an app that behaves exactly this way, or maybe not that many of them at least, but it has different views depending on whether you're holding your device in a portrait or a landscape mode. Mm-hmm. So in portrait mode is when you can input things, and when you turn it to landscape, then you see the prayers and you can slide them back and forth with your finger and see the different prayers. You can even attach a contact to a prayer and from your contact list, and you'll have the ability to email them directly from the prayer request or tweet about the prayer request or whatever it may be. There's text lots them. Of mm-hmm. social, yeah, you can text them as well. Lots of social links based on their contact information that's included. So
that is an awesome idea. I wish I had thought of that. Because you've got your phone with you or tablet or whatever, mm-hmm. and it's a great reminder device to say, hey, it's lunchtime. Now's the time to maybe spend a few minutes in prayer about these particular topics or people. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
I've definitely started prayer journals before and have kind of fallen by the wayside with those. We actually have a women's prayer group here in Sleepy Eye, and each year I make up a little paper journal and give out to people, with places for them to fill in different prayer concerns and things. But I think I personally would be a lot more receptive to this electronic version of it. So yeah. I was excited to find this.
That's neat. So that's not even your pick. That's just a little bonus ministry resource.
That's our ministry resource. That's right. So yeah, let us know if you're using the prayer journal or if you give it a try, what your thoughts are. And like I said, I'll have a link in the show notes. There is a light version. I think you can store up to 5 prayers for free in the light version. So if you just want to give it a trial run, that might be a good way to get started with it. iOS only.
Now I've got some homework to do. I got to find an Android-like app because that's a great application.
I did some searching and didn't come up with anything right off the bat, but I bet they're out there. So.
Yeah, they got to be, or I'll write my own.
There you go. You have the power.
I have the power. Let's move on to news and tech, Sally.
News and tech. I just wanted to make mention because I thought it was really cool that Google Street View has now gone underwater. So there are about 5 or 6 locations worldwide where you can actually see panoramas of underwater locations, like in Hawaii and in the Philippines and things. Some really amazing photography. That Google camera will just go anywhere. So we'll have a link in the show notes to an article about that, and you can check out some of the photography associated.
I've seen a little bit of that. It is amazing. They must have been using some really high-end photography gear to get the clarity that they got in some of those obviously very difficult to photograph areas. So very lifelike, and it's very cool.
So they've got the normal level all mapped out with Street View. We can see all kinds of different locations. They've gone to the stars and now they've gone underwater. I think they're running out of places to send that Google camera.
I think that's about it.
Yeah.
Yes. Although having said that, they'll be on Mars, doing that thing over there.
Sure.
Speaking of picks, Sally, I think it's that time of the show. Where one of our favorite times of the show, where we talk about a piece of software, hardware, website that has grabbed our attention and maybe found some usefulness in our workflows and ministries. So what have you found this week, Sally?
Well, being a short week, we had to come up with picks pretty quickly after a show. And I was really struggling, but thanks to my friend Rachel Pearson, who teaches at Trinity in Waukesha, she tweeted just a little while ago about a new website called Vocaroo. It's VOCAROO.com, and it is an online voice recorder or audio recorder. And you just simply navigate to the website, click to record. It uses Flash to do the recording, so it'll ask you to allow it to communicate with your microphone. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you're done, you can email it out. You can tweet it if you want or share it on Facebook or other social networks. And it also gives you embed code so you can embed your audio on another website. And then finally, there are links to download the audio in multiple audio formats. So you can save your audio. I recorded an example, and actually I recorded it about 3 or 4 times because it cut me off. So that was kind of disappointing. And I thought there was a time limit. I checked out the help file and it said that there weren't any limits, but brief internet outages can cause the recording to stop or fail. I talked quickly and I got a good recording. I have a sample to include in the show notes. They even give you a QR code that you can share to link people to your audio recording. So there's every conceivable flavor of making use of this voice message that you record, but they don't they don't have a set retention policy for these recordings. So you can't be guaranteed that it's still going to be there 3 years from now. If it's something important, you should download a copy of it. Mm-hmm. But I think a nifty little app, I definitely could see it being used in a classroom, maybe to record some feedback on a project or something like that. And, you know, for all those Chromebooks that are going into classrooms around the world that don't have a local voice recorder installed on the computer, this would be a cloud-based way to do voice recording. So worth a try. And many thanks to my friend Rachel for sharing it. Just in time, Rachel. Very good.
Our listeners always come through, Sally.
Yeah, thankfully.
All right. My pick of the week is another Google product, and it is a tool that has been around for time. It's gone through a number of revisions, however. Some call it Google Talk. In fact, when I load this up on my phone, it's called Google Talk. Mm-hmm. But basically, the way it presents itself on the web is your chat window. And so it works like a regular contact list. And Sal, are you on here? Where is Draper? Oh, she looks
incognito, apparently.
So if I clicked on Sally, I could say, hi, Sally. And she'll get a notification on her computer because I know she is online. And it's one of those things where I usually have Google Plus open because I'm, you know, either posting there or checking out what's written. And we can communicate via text this way. But I also can communicate not just on the web, but on any of my mobile devices that have this app running. Because I use Android, it comes up right away as like a text message. So it's easy for me to stay in touch regardless of where I am. And what Google Talk/chat now has incorporated with it is the ability to make a phone call or, yes, indeed, do a Google Hangout. So you have audio conferencing or video conferencing, and it's very easy to use. It just appears everywhere in all your Google products now. It appears in your Gmail, so it's in your contacts list on the left-hand side. So if you have Gmail and Google Plus open at the same time, it's going to appear in both areas. So I've got little bings and bongs happening all over the place when somebody's trying to contact me. But I like its simplicity, and it just does what it does well. It's very reliable. The voice side is through VoIP, so there's no charge for domestic calls. So you can use that as your regular phone system. It works with Google Voice as well, mm-hmm. Which we've talked about in the past. And then the Hangout side, all of our viewers now can see how well that works, and it's really a seamless experience. So that is my second pick of the week.
Pick of next week. How about
right,
that?
Pick of next week. Yeah, let's call it that. So,
yeah.
All right. So those are our picks of the week, Sally. Shall we move along to community feedback?
We shall. And right off the bat, I want to share some news about Moodle. I don't know how many that watch or listen to the podcast are familiar with Moodle, but it's a course management system, and it is actually what we use to host our Wells.net University site. And I know that MLC and Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary make use of Moodle for their online learning platform as well. I just recently fielded a question because Great Plains Lutheran High School was looking at going with iPads potentially, and they wanted to know if Moodle was going to work on the iPad. Interesting question. And just for your information, in case you're wondering the same thing, there is actually a Moodle app for iOS. Let me just do a quick screen share. It's called My Moodle, and it does allow you to do things like upload to your Moodle site and see who the participants are and things like that. It's a little bit limited. The interface is not the same, and it's actually designed for iPhone, not optimized for the full iPad experience. But the key trigger there is the upload capability. So if you have course requirements, files to submit for class, you can do it through the My Moodle. And if you're familiar at all with the the interface on the iPad, it typically doesn't allow you to just look for files on your iPad if you're running software in Safari or whatever. So using this, you can get access to your file system and upload files and things. So that's a plus of the app. But Moodle works fine otherwise in Safari. So you can navigate to your Moodle sites and interact with them exactly the way you would online, with the exception of Flash content. If teachers post Flash video or Flash audio, that's not going to work on an iPad no matter what. So I think Moodle is workable on an iPad. I would question doing any kind of long assignments with the iPad keyboard on screen and things. That would be a little bit challenging, I would think. Yeah. Maybe you'd want to go with external keyboards if you really wanted the kids doing a lot of typing or whatever. But they certainly should be able to interact with a Moodle site on an iPad.
Cool.
Interesting question.
Nice find.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Next up, we had some links shared in our DIGO group, specifically a couple from Tom Rosenow to 19pencils.com, which is apparently in beta and has free educational tools and resources for teachers. Websites, videos, and more for K through 12 students from teachers all around the world. So I haven't dug below the surface yet, but if it's recommended by Tom, I bet it's worth the time to check out. So I will be doing that. Thanks, Tom, for the link. And one more from Tom, who teaches out in Pigeon, Michigan, out in the thumb of Michigan. Tom found Symbaloo.com, S-Y-M-B-A-L-O-O.com. And this basically could serve as a home screen and have links to all kinds of different functionality. So you can tie in Google search, you can tie in your local weather, you can connect it to your Facebook, you can connect it to your Twitter, your Flickr accounts, all different things. You can get your Gmail here and things. And you know, I, for one, am an iGoogle user. I have my home computer set to come up with the iGoogle Homespring, but iGoogle's going away. So this might be a good replacement tool for just kind of a collecting point for all those different places you like to visit on the web.
Now, it says search for a tag. Do the sites have to support inclusion in this, or you can put any site as a link in there?
Well, that particular one I had highlighted was Flickr. So if you were searching Flickr, you would put in the tag, but you also can connect, like if you're wanting your Facebook to be tied in, you can actually log into your Facebook account. Mm-hmm. If you want your Twitter to be tied in, you can sign in with your Twitter account and so on. And they do have a tour. So if you want to learn more about Symbaloo, that's probably a great place to get started. But it basically is something you can personalize for your own internet experience.
So does it launch websites in a different tab if you click on the appropriate thing?
Or? Sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. For instance, this CNN, you'll notice it has a little RSS icon. So it's given me the latest CNN feeds, article. Right. But when I click on Gmail, you can see it has a little arrow icon and it will launch a separate tab for your Gmail.
Gotcha.
So depends
on... In your browser.
Exactly.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it can act as a Google, an iGoogle replacement in that regard.
And if you just click plus, you can add more. You can search for different tiles they have available or create your own.
Well, so, put wellstech.wells.net on there.
You think so, huh?
Yeah.
Well, that's a little bit of a challenge to do it live here.
Really?
Here we go.
Oh, I thought it was just a punch it in and you're done. No, she's typing. This is good radio.
Thanks, Martin. I'm typing because you told me to. I'm not going to upload an image. I'm just going to add it.
See what happens.
And see what happens.
So you can put your own logo there. So you've got that.
And there it is. And it will open Wells Tech in a new tab.
Look at that.
Just that quick.
Very visual. Very easy to do. And then you got them all there. You can put them into their own little quadrants.
Yeah.
Very cool. I like it.
Yeah. So give it a try and thank Tom Rosenow for the find.
So maybe your new homepage.
Maybe so.
Okay.
All right. One more from Church Mag, a must-have Bible teaching iPhone app. They are promoting an app called Clips, It's teaching the Bible using scenes from movies. And basically mm-hmm. someone has compiled a lot of movie scenes that have teachable moments and tag them with different categories and things like happiness, hope, hypocrisy, integrity, jealousy, and even included some discussion type questions, mm-hmm. which might be used in a Christian Bible study kind of setting. And so the app itself costs $3. So if you have the app or are actually get it, we'd love to hear some reviews of what you think of something Church Mag has titled Must Have Bible Teaching Material.
Okay. Looks promising. There are, I know I've had books that do this too, but this is real handy. So, mm-hmm. All right.
Continuing on, back on show 251, we talked about KidBlog, and kidblog.org is a website where you can easily set up classroom blogging. This week we heard from Rachel Pearson, who teaches at Trinity in Waukesha, and she says they're KidBlogging, and to find their class online at kidblog.org/Mrs. Pearson's class-2.
Awesome.
So we headed over to check out their KidBlog. Rachel and her students would love to hear from you. If you read some of their blog posts and want to make a comment, they would greatly appreciate
that. I love the design too, Rachel. That's awesome.
Yeah, and the other neat thing is the kids can set up their own design. This one apparently picked the same. But as I drilled down into some of these other blog posts, the kids had selected different designs.
Oh,
like
there's
Grace's
one. Grace's
blog with a parrot at the top. And
oh, that's fun.
Yeah. I think so. So they're off and running with KidBlog, and apparently it's thanks to the Wells Tech podcast. So we're happy that it was a service to you.
Take the credit, yeah.
Absolutely.
But the hard part is what she's doing is managing all that
there
and
you
the
go.
Kids up there. So I hope the kids are having fun with that. It looks like they are. So
one more comment from Rachel following up on our Chromebook discussion that we had this week in episode 255. During the course of that discussion, Gail Potratz mentioned that she hadn't been able to get accelerated reading working on the Chromebooks. That was a website that the Chromebooks didn't like for some reason. Mm-hmm. And Rachel tweeted that they just pretty much ignored the warnings they were getting about it, and it's working for them without a problem. So
okay.
Whatever
good
Chromebook
tip.
Seems to be coughing about, it's really something you can just ignore and keep right on going. And she later tweeted that they had to make sure that accelerated reading was allowed to use pop-ups. So maybe it's a pop-up blocker issue that's coming into play there. But apparently it does work. So that's good news for the Chromebook world. And a late breaking tweet right before we started recording, Jimmy Pouts tweeted about this recent article that came out on The Verge .com website, and it's from one of their employees
right.
who apparently broke his computer and was kind of broke in the pocketbook and decided that a Chromebook was the most economical answer for him. So this is a business person using a Chromebook to do.
Who loves Cheerios apparently.
Yeah. Who's not Cheerios found. Who, is using it, you know, to do day-to-day full-time work as a business person. And he's talking about whether or not he could survive without his Photoshop, basically. And I think he brings out some real good pros and cons of the Chromebook experience and living with it for a while, different things that he liked and didn't like about the Chromebook experience. He ends the article by saying he's going back into studying for his master's degree, and he thinks it'll be a lot more suited for the education side than for the business side. So sounds like a great fit for education.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, too. I think the use case there is more on the education side mm-hmm. than on the business side. But cool.
Good read, and thanks for sharing that with us, Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
And Martin, you get to wrap up community feedback with a find you shared on Google+.
Yeah, a little bit of good news coming out of Facebook. I'm not, again, a huge Facebook fan, although I think it has its uses. And for congregations, I do recommend it as a potential intranet tool, a place where you can keep everybody up to date and share photos and videos and those kinds of things. So I think it does that really well. And you can lock it down, of course, if you know what you're doing. But one thing it has always, always, always lacked is a way to share files easily. And so good news in an article I found, I think it was just yesterday, and I posted it on Google Plus. In fact, I think I found it on Google Plus. Title of the article is Facebook Pairs with Dropbox for an Easier Path to File Sharing. And the article goes on to talk a little bit about how or what kind of led to this decision and some of the things that I was thinking about, they were thinking about too. So you do have the ability in a post now and elsewhere to add a file from Dropbox. So the storage is right there and you can manage stuff from there. And it's really a big win, I think, for those people, especially congregations who want to use Facebook. And I guess I would say more for intranet than anything else. So that's a nice addition that Facebook has made there.
So that's live now, and we could activate that on our accounts, or is it rolling out? Or
let's see. I think it says blah 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 blah. I think it's available now.
Cool.
We'll roll out slowly. So those familiar maybe. Words.
Maybe we'll share something on our Facebook Wells Tech page. And
yeah,
see if our listeners
that would be
can
a great idea.
It.
How
give
about
it a,
that?
Kick the old tires there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think is that it for community feedback, or we got something else yet?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's it.
Sally, I assume there's going to be a next week, but actually next week will be the week after next when I'm back from my photography class in Door County. And we are going to be renewing our review of our selected book called Presentation Zen from Gar Reynolds. Mm-hmm. This is chapter 2 we're already up to. Yeah. Creativity, Limitations and Constraints. Sally's holding up the book there, second edition. I'm actually starting to teach my dynamic classroom presentations class, online class for MLC next week, and now that is a required text for it. So I think highly of the book, and I think anybody interested in kind of amping up or taking their presentations to the next level, whether they be in church, Bible class, or catechism class, or in the classroom as an elementary or high school teacher, this is a book you ought to pay attention to and happily follow along with us, because we're going to hit the highlights for you, and we would love your feedback as we go.
I know we have at least one person reading along, and that's Perry Lund. He tweeted about finishing up chapter 1 just as we were. So
sweet.
Yep. Everybody else can join in as well.
Okay. Sally, that's probably about enough. I got to get packed and going. actually, I'm not leaving quite yet, but we are going to close the show as we always do with the music of Koine, one of our favorite musical groups. If God Had Not Been On Our Side is the name of the song they'll be playing. We appreciate all the artists who allow us to play their music at the end of our shows. That's something that I always look forward to hearing as well. So please come back. Actually, for you, it'll be next week, and we'll do some more good stuff. So take care and see you soon.
Consumed us, and as a deep and dark seeks to overwhelm us.
Made the earth and heaven.